Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, it is available on Spotify. We are in the midst of grown-up movie season with the award season, but we're not going to let serious cinema get in the way of, well, a regular guest who has his own intro.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never!
I do hateful things for which people love me, and I do lovable things for which they hate me. I'm admired for my detestability.
It is a newspaper's duty to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
I don't like that fellow.
Abdul Kim Shabazz is in the house of indie politics fame and the former King of England.
I had a better exit than Harry did.
Well, I still live. We both live, so that was good on that in that show. We're talking about Henry IV, Part One, that which we were a part of at Indie Bard Fest back in October.
And actually, it was really good working with the cast because I haven't been on stage in that capacity in a really, really, really long time.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to say this, and I'm saying this in front of him. 99% of the time, when we see or hear Abdul, we are seeing the finished product. This is the first time I got to see Mr. Shabazz
seriously
work. and yes, he followed direction, and he took direction, but we were all sweating. And we were sweating together.
Yes, we were.
So, but yeah, he worked. My actor works. Yes, he works. So, yeah.
And at the end of the day, it dawned on me because one of the scenes in Henry IV that was, it's like the big, like at the end of Act One when Henry and, you know, Hal are.
You don't hit your son.
Yeah, you got to hit your son having that moment. It has never been my nature to get, as you know, to get worked up and yell and scream.
Unless it's Eric Michael Dyson.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Larry. Or what Tony Zirkle.
The Great Porn Dragon, yeah, Tony Zirkle. Or being at a Watchmen screening at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
On a Monday in January.
I have seen your dander get up probably more than anybody except your lovely wife.
Yeah, and my son.
And so
when it finally clicked to, you know, just get that part, it all happened. I was just sitting home, just kind of decompressing, watching V for Vendetta.
So something good came out of that film.
Yes. Actually, it was John Hurt's character as a chancellor.
Yes.
When he's just yelling and screaming at the people to go find Mr. Vendetta, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, my God, that's it. That's the yelling and screaming. Because I first thought it was kind of hokey. Then I did. And then our director, Glenn Dobb, was like, where have you been?
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. As you come along, you try different approaches, and it rehearsal, the learning of the character, the learning of the lines is not just on the stage. At least we hope it's not. You come across things and you're like, oh, I should try that. Or, you know, even if somebody, you see somebody losing it in public, and you're like, I could use that.
Yep.
So absolutely. So Abdul has a way that noise you just heard. I've heard him do this on radio to calm a listener or a caller down. And then he used it in the show. And, of course, as I'm watching it, I have to imitate – there's a bar scene where I have to imitate him and his son have to imitate him. And, of course, we lifted that.
Yes, they did. Of course, it did kind of make them feel a little uncomfortable in the very beginning when the director said, okay, I want you to kind of mock your dad and mock the king. And so it was like, oh, well, how am I going to
– Well, yeah, Matt – I looked at Matt Walls and I said, look, I've known him for a long time and I we're not going to – We're not doing Transformers.
No.
We, of course, talking about the second Transformers with the hip-hop robots that nobody asked for.
I'm the king around here. It's like, whoa, hey, that's enough.
How was your decompression after the show? Because what is a general thing, I swear we'll get the film, folks, but you know, once the sad thing usually with a production like this is that once you get a really good rhythm and you start, the show is done. I'm back at my regular hours.
Well, actually, I had two things happen right after the show, so I really didn't have time to decompress, because Mom passed away.
That's right.
October 30th. She'd been dealing with Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and then they had the presidential election. No, I mean, so the mayoral election.
Mayoral, yeah.
Right after that, so I didn't really get a chance to start to decompress until, like, when I went out of town last weekend.
Wow.
Because I still had, after the mayor's race, we had to do all that, then school, and then, you know, all that holiday stuff, and then session started, and it's 2020. And so last weekend, I was like, you know what? I got some lawyer work to do out of town. I'm going to leave for a couple extra days just to do nothing.
Exactly. Which you should do. Which you have to do. Now, have you done Henry lines in your writing and in your daily activities since then?
I do occasionally find myself kind of semi-remembering the opening line, so shaken as we are, so worn with care. Find we now a time for frightened peace to pant, and we short-winded accents into new broils, to strands far remote. The edge of war, like an ill sheathed knife, no more shall cut her master.
I spend time under tavern tables.
But I actually have, I watched a couple of versions of Henry IV. I have an audible version that I've kind of helped use to kind of memorize lines.
Yes.
And comparing them to us, they suck.
Okay.
They did. And then I would occasionally watch the Jeremy Irons version.
Yeah, he's what we call in the business not bad.
Yeah, no, he was, you know, and actually it was interesting just kind of watching the way he played his character a lot more low-key than I did.
And he did it with low-key.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Yes.
With Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston.
This is the Hollowed Crown collection, which I highly recommend. Ben Whishaw is Richard II, and Henry IV is Jeremy Irons, and then Tom Hiddleston, and then Henry V. And it's a really, 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 and it's funny because watching that, I also have the ritual of once a play is over, I will go and watch the movie version of said play because I don't want to do it while I'm in rehearsal. The other part is I'm praying to God I didn't like subconsciously lift something from somebody, and watching that. And their Falstaff, who is a classically trained English that guy, he was, you know, I think the last big American film he was in was, and his name eludes me, sorry, but he was in the film version of Into the Woods as the baker's father. But, you know, serious hardware. And his was considerably low-key compared to the drunken clown that I was doing.
Well, but it is true. I totally understand your point about not watching the film version before you do it so you don't, you know, subconsciously sort of lift away.
Right.
But for me and Shakespeare, I had to watch Henry IV just because I haven't done, like I said, I hadn't been on stage in forever.
I understand that. Everybody has a different process.
Yeah. Now, I will say it was actually easier to take that as the foundation than when I'm having the conversation with our director and the cast. Okay, I get it. I see.
Yeah.
You know. What's going on? And then also, you got to remember, too, Shakespeare's written iambic pentameter, so you got to remember all that stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
To go along with it. However, when I did Driving Miss Daisy, though, back in 2002, I think it was, I only watched the movie one time. Mm-hmm. Just once. But actually, to do Hoke the Driver, I actually listened to more Richard Pryor than I did Morgan Freeman.
Now, what caused you to do that?
Because I was, Hoke to me was sort of the Mudbone character.
Ah, I think I was wondering also if, because if you know Abdul,
You know, Hulk does not really shoot back with comebacks. He does eventually when he has to make water, but that is not you. So
and that's
I think getting that out of your system.
When all my friends saw it, they said, you just played a 75-year-old humble subservient black man. That, my friends, is acting.
It's called acting, dear boy. Try it sometime. Yeah. So, but yeah, I watched that. I watched Chimes at Midnight.
Water's cold.
And Deep Two. Can't do that anymore. But Chimes at Midnight, which was Orson Welles' Falstaff, and The King with Timothée Chalamet and as Henry as Hal, and Joel Edgerton as Falstaff. And I'm not going to talk about that. Anyway, it was fun to revisit that stuff. But yeah, I still first couple of weeks after that show was done, I was like, a good Sherry Sack, I have to fold operation.
Well, what was funny was when my wife and one of her best friends came to watch us. They thought we did a really great job, but what just surprised me was like, how'd you guys remember all those lines? Like, because that's kind of what you're supposed to do.
It's funny because I've talked to chefs and people. I'm gonna name drop like Robert Irvine and some others, and people who don't do it. But I was like, a musician knows thousands of songs. You know thousands of recipes, Abdullah. You know thousands of law.
Yeah, legal
stuff. Yeah, so
it's like I told her, like, well, sweetie, think about it. You're a massage therapist. How do you know all the nerves in the body, you know where to apply pressure.
You know how to do a 30, a 60, yep. A 90. I couldn't do that.
A 15.
A 15. We won't talk about the 3. No. Speaking of which,
we've been there for 10 years. I'm looking to get the 5.
Anyway, moving on. Speaking of stuff that we had memorized down to a pat, so we talked about this on the show last week, of course, with Simon Majumdar, but raising a glass to Terry Jones.
Oh yeah.
As we were talking, he based his drag character off of his mother. So I'm like, wow, that's got to be a rough childhood if you're living with Brian's mom. But your thoughts on Terry Jones? Because I know so when Abdul and I first met, one of the first things we kind of latched onto was that if there was a lull in radio conversation, we could quote Richard Pryor until we could not, and Monty Python.
Monty Python. No, but it was one of those things that as we get a little bit older ourselves, I kind of feel like we're at the age that our parents were when a lot of the movie stars that they grew up with started to pass and leave this world. So when you see, you know, Terry Jones pass away from Monty Python, it's like, okay, I remember him and blah, blah, blah. You know, think about other, you know, sort of famous older actors who are now, like, you know, they're, you know, late 70s.
When Clint Eastwood dies, this globe is going to be, you know, they're not going to know what to do with themselves.
As long as he takes that third or that last Dirty Harry movie with him.
The Deadpool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
How about we bury that with
him? And by the way, I don't go on the internet the day Jane Fonda dies.
No.
I'm going to just leave it.
You,
if you want to avoid ugly, do that. Yeah, but yeah, there's stuff that we grew up with. As I've mentioned many times, and I give Bob Vavra the credit for this, and he told me this, gosh, 20 years ago, because I was in college when Graham Chapman died. I believe we're same age, right? But Bob said that being a member of Python was the comic equivalent of being a Beatle. And everything, and you know, all of them went on to successful quote unquote solo careers, but everything they did after that was going to be measured with those five seasons
exactly.
And those films.
And then those films. So, you know, because I, like I said, I loved them, of course, obviously, in Life of Brian, which is, as you know, my Christmas tradition.
Yeah. Yes. And John Cleese said on Twitter that he thought the best, his Terry Jones's greatest contribution was directing Life of Brian.
Yeah. No, but love that. Also, in Quest for the Holy Grail,
Mrs. Communist Peasant.
Yeah, Mrs. Communist Peasant. And then, you know, in Meaning of Life.
Well, you know, it's funny. I watched that again yesterday, and I was 13 when Meaning of Life came out, and I've mentioned before. Where, like, The Big Chill should be watched every 5 years. And, well, you're dressed like one of the cast members at the moment. But, you know, the beginning of that film is the Terry Gilliam portion where you have the pirate accountants. And,
yeah.
And you know, I remember initially watching that going, where are the Python guys? I don't understand this. And then it gets into, obviously, the chapters that we have of life from birth, school, living, and dying.
And there they sailed off into the sunset and would have so had certain modern theories of the world's shape not been proven to be wrong.
See, there you go. And I remember at the time thinking it was kind of a mixed bag. I haven't seen it in quite a while, but I knew it. You know, I still talk to friends online from high school. I said, can we have your liver?
Yeah.
Or, you know, we're going to take a baby out of a lady's tummy.
Oh, one of the things we do with one science nowadays.
And don't forget the machine that goes bing. So, but it's actually.
That means your baby is still alive.
Aren't you lucky? So, but I think it's better than I thought when I first watched it. And part of it because is I have a 5 in my age now compared to a 1.
But also, too, I would argue with the meaning of life, it depends on how well you think the movie is. Kind of depends on the mood you're in.
Yeah.
If it's something that you really want to see, then you really, really like it. But if it's just sort of there on television, unlike a Holy Grail or Life of Brian, where you'll probably just stop and watch the whole thing all the way through. Meaning of life, okay.
You could go to Mr. Creosote and the Grim Reaper and
or good evening. Welcome to the middle of the film.
There's also three musical numbers in that film. Never forget that.
Christmas in Heaven.
Yes, Every Sperm is Sacred. The only time I can say that. But I think also I was talking with the guys, and if I remember right, I going back to calling them like a rock band, you know, Universal wanted another film from them. And, you know, they had been, you know, the last Life of Brian was 4 years after, 4 years prior.
Yeah.
And I think I have to do a little more research, but I think there was this kind of thing. Oh, if you want a movie from us, let us make what we want to make. So that's why you got the Terry Gilliam opening and you had some really Every Sperm is Sacred and Mr. Creosote alone. And, you know, the segment where Graham Chapman's Way of Dying, which is how I want to die.
And also, don't forget also Monty Python Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah, but that was, I mean, I can't remember if that was Universal or not, but that was also a fun experience. But I think this one was, they were really going to kind of have a theatrical or cinematic middle finger. If you want one, here it comes. And they had a bigger budget, bigger production value. Obviously, when, you know, Every Sperm is Sacred looks like something out of Oliver.
Yes.
So, but they were able to do that when they'd had a limited budget for Grail and slightly bigger budget, but not that much for Brian.
Well, but the interesting thing about Brian was all the controversy sort of around it.
Well,
because I don't know if you've ever seen the – I can't remember which British sort of talk show it was.
Oh, Cleese Takes Him Down.
It was Cleese and also Michael Palin and the one Bishop guy who had a whole bunch of other stuff kind of going on.
Uh-huh.
And he kind of basically called a bunch of high school, you know, sophomore boys. And
by the way, let me get Olivia inside a little inside scoop. When somebody doth protest too much and then gets busted, Abdul and I send each other the articles privately. Going, here's this guy, here's that guy.
Uh-huh, and here's this guy, and here's that guy who got caught with that guy.
Guy, yeah. So, careful.
Yep. I always thought that was interesting because even all the flack they were getting from some of the more, I would say, zealot sections of the religious community, for lack of a better term.
Your callers.
Yeah, exactly. Is, you know, you had Michael Palin say, look, you know, the guy who played Jesus was a classically trained, you know, actor. And he says, and everything he says was, you know, literally from the Sermon on the Mount. And so the thing about was the people around him and how they were interpret everything. And that's why the first line is, speak up!
Yeah. Jesus Christ comes off pretty well because it's not about him.
Right.
And he is not ridiculed. So that, and I think that's which was the big argument for those who hadn't seen it. It's making fun of organized religion.
Yes.
Not making fun of Jesus.
You're all individuals.
Yes. We are. Splitter. So, yeah, if you haven't yet, go check out some Life of Brian and Monty Python and raise a glass of Terry Jones. And yes, he also wrote Labyrinth because there's a cult following of Labyrinth, especially of young ladies that. There was an article, I can't remember who wrote it, but it was a column basically saying, ladies, please stop comparing all men to the Goblin King.
Well, that and was it Gilliam or Jones who wrote Ice Pirates?
No, that's not a Python production.
Okay. Well, I thought Terry Jones directed Ice Pirates.
No.
Time Bandits.
Oh, I will check on that. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show.
Notice here the segue.
Hot typing action. No, that's Gilliam. That's yeah. Gilliam. Yeah. So he's still with us. Although Terry Gilliam needs to relax.
Yes.
He needs to stop talking for a little bit.
Is he going
to
become a crotchety old man?
Well, he's saying he's tired of white men, old white men getting blamed for everything, and he wants to be, yeah, you kind of.
But I do think in a weird way he kind of has a point. I mean, I'm sorry, the social justice warrior crap gets old after a while. Get a job.
but I think when you're also he's decided to become a quote black lesbian in transition. We get what you're trying to say. Sit down. So anyway, speaking of, I guess we're doing an early version of Dead People We Like. We don't usually do it this early in the show, but there is somebody that passed away this week that I want to get proper credit to, and that's comedian Jack Burns. Jack Burns will be known as he was the guy.
Was the guy who took over after Don Knotts left on the Andy Griffith
right.
show?
Right. He lasted as Deputy Warren Ferguson. He lasted 11 episodes, and then they just kind of. That's not all he was known for. Okay, so before that he did a comedy duo with George Carlin. And if you get a chance, and I think it's on YouTube, although you should probably buy a physical copy because I would say that. No. But I believe it's Burns and Carlin Live at the Playboy Club. And this is 62, 63 uh-huh. maybe, back when you had comedy duos doing yeah. that stuff. But it's interesting to hear that because especially in the early – this is – and by the way, if you want to see a short-haired, clean-shaven George Carlin, here you go.
Yeah.
But to hear him in a comedy duo format, but also some voices and characters that Carlin would continue to do throughout the 70s, the kind of East Coast housewife yeah. and the East Coast husband and the East Coast knuckle dragger kind of guys. So anyway, so he did that. And yes, he did Andy Griffith. And then he did a comedy team with Avery Schreiber. In fact, they had a summer replacement show on, I think, ABC for a summer.
Huh.
Appeared in a few things, but and of course, if you're a fan of Fridays, the TV, the attempt, he's the one that gets into the quote unquote fight with Andy Kaufman.
Okay,
so him. But the thing, the reason why I'm bringing up this man's work, besides the fact that he's a comic, and
because I keep forgetting that also not only was Andy Kaufman in part of that. But also Richard Belzer.
And Michael Richard.
And Michael Richards.
Who was in that sketch.
Yeah, it was in that sketch. And I remember Richard Belzer getting sort of the head thing from Hulk Hogan.
Well, that was later.
Okay.
But that was later on. That was not during Fridays. Because that was to promote WrestleMania, which was, I think, 83?
Yeah, the first WrestleMania was like 83, 84. 84.
Okay. But it should be noted that that Jack Burns was a writer for the Muppet movie.
Huh.
Right? See, that's why I do this. So
was he the one who made Animal grow really, really tall at the end of the thing when the guy was going to shoot Kermit to make it do a frog?
I guess that was him. So, yeah, he did a lot of TV stuff, of movie stuff and TV appearances.
Break out the big giant contract.
But yeah, he wrote the Muppet movie. So, make sure it's...
And paid $1 million to Orson Welles just to be at the very end.
Oh, my God. But, he also did the Paul Lynn Comedy Hour and the TV adaptation of Peter Pan was a right...
Mr. Soucy, we need to talk about your son, Eddie Munster.
It's a little more Nicholson than Lynn, but, yeah, I get that. And he also wrote for Flip Wilson. And I remember, I think it was Alan Thicke who said he was a part of the writing team. And you've not lived till you've heard a bunch of white writers all sounding like Geraldine.
Yes.
Like this show. So,
which, by the way, speaking of Geraldine, we like to segue here.
Yes.
I want to say, I can't remember which organization it was, but this was about maybe 5-6 years ago. We kind of did like a Rowan and Martin laugh-in over at Marion University.
Were you Geraldine?
Yes.
Did you shave your legs?
No. But
you wore the hosiery.
Yeah, yeah. In the Devil Made Me Do It skit, which is what I did.
What you see?
Yeah, what you see is what you get. So so here I am, like in the dressing room, just put on the costume, and it was like a '70s, that kind of long kind of unitard dress
yes.
deal
yeah.
and, you know, the straight hair wig. And I look over the mirror and I'm like, oh, my God, I look just like my grandmother in 1965. Mustache and everything.
Oh, he said that. So,
yeah. By the way, the devil said if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't have a job.
Yes, exactly. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Dukeem Shabazz and I are just enjoying our presence with each other.
It's been a while, folks.
Been a while. So this is the time of year. We're going to shift the films because we should. This is an exception to the rule where I'm going to recommend, and I think I've had you on this show before, where I'm going to recommend something. Because even though I have not seen it, I am recommending the experience. We are in troubled times. And I don't even mean about the political
that
climate.
Stuff, yeah.
I'm talking about being a good member of the audience.
Yes.
We have talked endlessly about being a good member. Not you, lovely listeners. You know how to behave when you're in a theater.
But I have a theory. And I noticed this over the past several years.
Yes, sir.
And tell me, I'd love to get your thoughts as somebody who's, you know, part of your vocation is to go to the movies, of course, save him the aisle seats.
The theater is a gathering place, as Mrs. Soce is known to say.
I have found that theaters have gotten a lot more reasonable where there's reserved seating.
Do you like reserved seats?
Yes.
Now have you actually paid for four seats so nobody will sit next to you?
One time I did do that because they won't let you
buy. That's very pricey.
Yeah. But you know what?
It's worth
it. For me to enjoy the film and be left alone.
Do you have your parasol and your pit helmet?
And my little native boy bringing me my...
He said that, not me.
Excuse me, Fonda Roy, could you bring me my sarsaparilla, please? Thank you very much. I'll just ring for the bad.
But thing. Yeah, there are certain... Well, certain multiplexes. First off, they have a bar. So I know you're enjoying that. And secondly, well, you'll enjoy that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then there are certain places that have reserved seats.
And I've noticed that with a movie theater with reserved seating tends to have a little bit better behaved audience than just the sit anywhere seating.
Okay. So and I believe the ticket price is a little higher, maybe?
Yeah, ticket prices are a little higher,
you know, okay.
for reserved seating. But it's just been over my...
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a race thing. This is not a class thing.
Yes, it is. It's a class thing.
Fine. I was about to say this is a shut up when you're in the theater thing.
Yeah. And for some strange reason, I just noticed that over the past 10 years that in the old days when you just bought your movie ticket and you went ahead to go hunt and find a seat, you kind of wild, wild west in there.
not a crummy Will Smith film.
The only good part of that movie is the giant spider when they're on the bicycle that flies.
No, the only good part of that is the exchange between Smith and Branna, which is also Richard Probst's intro to this program.
Hello, Dr. West. I haven't seen you in a coon's age.
Man, it takes like this for a man to stand up. Be careful. We're not doing that. Anyway. So... Okay. Yeah. For me, you say it's a class system, it's classic. I, of course, say it's a shut up in the theater thing.
And then I'll go another step further is the reserve seating with a bar, and the further north side you go, the even better behave the audience. Which is why when I go see a movie at Keystone at the Crossing, I know I can sit there and enjoy the movie, and everybody knows how to act. 38th and Lafayette Road, not so much.
The opinions of Abdul-Kashim Shabazz are not those that were not Indie Politics, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, Abdul at IndiePolitics.org. That's how you get a hold of me.
Have you done this column for Indie Politics yet?
Not yet, but
it is. Well, Oscar's almost coming up, so.
Well, now you can sports bet on Oscars.
Oh, good Lord. Don't put little Timmy's college fund
in. I'm going to ask you, what do you think about that?
I don't gamble. I mean, if I gamble, I go to Atlantic
That's
City.
Right, you're a Detroit fan. Of course you don't gamble.
Yes, right. We have gambled and lost.
You've suffered enough.
Put the money down. Yeah, that's 100.
I guess in Vegas you can bet on anything, but when the Indiana Gaming Commission said it was okay for the sports betting people to bet on the Oscars. Like, what are you going to bet? Do best foreign film?
I would say if you're betting on cinematography, you have a gambling problem. I think it's somebody also. I believe it was the morning show that's famous here and that's nationally renowned. If you're betting on women's college basketball or women college sports, you have a gambling problem. So
yeah, because we all have our favorite films, but yeah, I'm betting, give me 1917 2-1.
No, I'm not. I don't. If I, like I said, if I'm in Atlantic City or on a cruise or in Vegas, every now and then, it's been a long, long time since I've been to one of the Indiana casinos. Sorry, I'll get there. But, nah, it's just not, it's just not in my blood.
Yeah, I want the parasite to cover the spread.
There you go. So anyway, at Keystone Arts this weekend, you have an opportunity to see the animated short films that are nominated, as well as the live-action short films that are nominated. So,
like Into the Spider-Verse?
No, that's not. That's a feature, and that was last year.
And my nephew was actually one of the composers on that.
Very good. Yeah. Yes, Skypoint.
Juice WRLD passed away earlier this year. That was my nephew.
How's your sister doing?
Holding up as well as to be expected. I mean, now that the autopsy report officially is out that it was an accidental drug overdose, I mean, we all kind of knew, but now it's sort of out there.
Sure. It is, folks, science.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's been very interesting from that perspective, because I knew my nephew. I mean, we weren't close because we just kind of grew up in totally different worlds or universes.
Right.
But and I never want to be that relative who, you know, just kind of latches on to another relative's success, even though you had nothing to do with it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, isn't a college signing day coming up soon?
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, that whole thing. So no, it's been tough for her, but hopefully it sends a message that if you are having, you know, issues or addiction issues, to you know, try to find somebody and get help, or if you know somebody having addiction issues, you know, make sure they can get the help that they need.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
That was the other thing I was dealing with during Henry V.
Yeah, that's, man, sometimes you got to keep the drama on the stage.
Yep.
Off the
and
stage.
Actually, so that did surprise our director, because our director did not know any of that was going on.
No, he's like, got 100 other things going on.
Yeah, I was
on,
like, I'm a grown up. I'll deal with this.
Exactly.
My job is, I'm here to do a job.
Yes. So at Keystone Arts, you can see the animated short films at 125. And I'm telling you this because the short and then the live action shorts are at 440. And then 7:15 for the animated short. So, you know, you have a chance to see five films and not know anything about them. And it's very rare. It's very rare for a critic. I think it's even less for a regular member of the audience, because you get to pick what you want to see.
Right.
If this looks interesting, that looks interesting. You know, you have the person or the couple every now and then that will just wander into the multiplex. You know, that.
Yep.
Yeah, but 99% of the time, we know what we're seeing. So here's an opportunity to go see something, one that you know, is revered because they're up for Academy Awards. Take that for what it's worth. But you have five animated films that you're not going to see anywhere else, and five live-action films that you're not going to see anywhere else. I say give it a shot.
As long as I do not have the guy in front of me talking to me about Marshall McLuhan.
That's an Annie Hall reference. So, because it's only if Marshall McLuhan is behind the plant telling this guy how wrong he is.
You know nothing of my work. How could you teach a class in anything?
Boy, if life were only like this. So anyway, that is happening at Keystone Arts. And then I want to go through what's coming around the central part of the area. And then we'll get into what Abdul has watched recently. At IU Cinema on Saturday the 1st. At 4:00. Oh, this is the Don Bluth era. The Secret of Nim. This was the 70s, early 80s, the dark times for animated films. This is pre-Disney Princess.
Yeah.
So that is at 4:00.
I saw another version called The Secret of Nympho.
We're not watching that. 7:00 on Saturday the 1st is Little Forest from 2018. Sunday, February 2nd at 1:00. The 1950 classic Billy Wilder film Sunset Boulevard. And then at 4:00, it was fun showing Emma. Emma, my daughter and partner, HW, she watched Sunset Boulevard because of Kristen Wiig.
Really?
There is, if you get a chance, go on YouTube or go to SNL's website, but there was a series of sketches with Bill Hader as Vincent Price. And he would host a Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas special, depending on what it was. And it was this one, it was Halloween, and it was Kristen Wiig as Gloria Swanson and John Hamm as James Mason.
Ready for my close-up.
And Fred Armisen as Liberace. We're going to leave it at that. So anyway, she saw that, and then we watched Sunset Boulevard. At 4:00.
I feel like Gloria Swanson. She looked like a mother.
Sunday, February 2nd at 4:00, the Jim Jarmusch film Patterson, and kudos for IU Cinema to get Jim Jarmusch to come into town, to campus over the weekend. Monday the 3rd from 1966, Tokyo Drifter. Really good Japanese crime drama. Thursday.
Subtitles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Abdul gives me the points out at me for the look if I don't like something that he likes, and you just ask the subtitle questions. I'm like, yeah, you read, you're well read. Thursday, February 6th at 7 o'clock, a pre-screening talk at 6:15 by Filiana Payton, PhD candidate at the University of Southern California, the domestic drama from 1974, Claudine. With Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones.
Somebody did a paper on that for a PhD assignment?
Well, there's one way to find out. Get on down there. So this by the way, not a blaxploitation film. It gets lumped into that because it's an African-American story in the 70s.
No, actually, Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones can actually act.
Yeah.
Number one.
So it's a – Diane Carroll plays a maid who falls for a garbage man played by James – and, of course, you say, I wish all maids and garbage men looked like them. But
you know what? I know exactly where this is going. This is going because I see it right now.
Is it the pontification of one's inner sanctum?
Uh-huh, yeah. But this person's
is Eric Michael Dyson going to be there?
No, but he may as well be there in spirit. Probably what this person is going to argue, and the reason why I know this, is it's a cultural thing.
I'm going to stand back. You go. That's all right.
Is the argument that part of the disintegration of the African-American family was based on those anti-poverty programs like that are featured in the movie Claudine. Because remember, you couldn't get welfare if there was a man in the house.
Yep.
Because there's one scene in the movie where like the social worker comes
shows
by,
up and
James Earl Jones is there, so he has to like take the TV and like hide it and then the bedroom. And so they're saying it's because of these systemic patterns, you know, of racism and oppression, you know, that is what, you know, drove the black man out of the house, which in turn, you know, yeah, I know exactly where this is going.
But you like Claudine the film.
Well, I love Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones.
Well, yes, we all do.
You know, Dominic Devereaux and Darth Vader. What more can anybody ask for?
and Lawrence Hilton Jacobs is the oldest cynical son.
Freddie Boom Boom Washington.
Freddie Boom Boom Washington. So, yeah. And Gladys Knight and the Pips and Curtis Mayfield with the soundtrack. So we watched this. Yeah, we watched this when Diane passed away, but anyway,
Superfly on that midnight train.
It is not. It is not a blaxploitation film. It is a very good domestic drama with two lovely performances from Carroll and Jones.
Yeah,
so.
and if you want the Michael Eric Dyson subtext, yeah, I know exactly where this is going.
Are you going? You should go down there.
Excuse me. What's a Nubian?
Friday.
Lando was a black guy. He flew the Millennium Falcon.
See, you're dressed like Ben Affleck. Friday, February 7th at IU Cinema.
Don't you?
Friday, February 7th, moving on. To each his own cinema at 7 o'clock. And then, Friday, February 7th, 10 p.m. at IU Cinema, David Lynch's Eraserhead.
Wow. I've actually seen that.
As have I.
I
was working at a video store in Carroll Stream, Illinois. And it was not a good shop. It was just money. And my boss always told me to put new titles on. Well, I didn't want to watch the new titles. I thought if I'm going to get very little money, I should get at least a benefit and watch movies I've never seen before. So I would go to, if you remember, the center of the video store. That's where the old titles were. And it was probably about a week or two, something like that. But I found a tape in the middle that was damaged. So my boss said, oh, well, keep doing that. And I was usually pretty good if I was watching a particular film that I could hit the pause button when customers entered. I was not so good when the mother and little 4-year-old daughter came in while I was watching Eraserhead. And I think I heard, Mommy, what's that? Click.
Yeah.
Can I help you? So, yeah, anytime you can see a David Lynch film in the theater, especially in a college crowd, go do that.
No, it's funny because back in the days of the video store, which, by the way, they're actually starting to make a comeback.
Family Video said we never went away.
Yeah, and part because with Netflix and
streaming,
Disney Plus, and Hulu, and all the streaming, you can't find what you want all on one channel anymore.
# physical copies.
Yeah, so the DVDs. Video store is actually kind of making a comeback because everything you want is actually there and in one
And I heard we knew it was coming, but of course Disney Plus, you know, y'all drank the Kool-Aid. Within what, a couple of weeks after that launch, they started pulling titles out and putting them into the vault. The other thing that they've done, and I remember I use this as a great example. If you remember the film Adventures in Babysitting, this was Elizabeth Shue and Penelope Ann Miller, and it was a Chris Columbus film. It was PG-13 because it had one little F-bomb near the end, and Elizabeth Shue's character says, "Don't F with the babysitter." Well, that's been removed. So, and by the way, Han shot first.
Yeah.
So
now I will say this. I will admit I do have Disney Plus.
Do you?
Yes.
And have you noticed things that have disappeared?
Actually,
like Thanos snapping his fingers.
Actually, the only reason why I got it is because all my old Marvel superhero cartoons are there.
Really? All the 60s stuff?
Yep.
You still watch those?
Yes. All the
60s. Has it held up?
Actually, it's it is just as cheesy then as it was now. And it's not just the 60s stuff, but it's also like the 80s Marvel superhero cartoons and the 90s stuff.
Okay.
As well. I mean, I only got
that. Are you having cereal in the morning while you're watching this?
Yes, I am. Captain Crunch and Fruit Loops.
Abdul, you got to go to the office. I know. I'm getting there
eventually. Yeah.
Green Goblin's in this one.
And I have my X-Men, the 90s X-Men cartoon.
Okay.
You know why? Because, well, pardon my French.
Because you can?
I'm a grown-ass man.
There you go.
I drive a Nissan Rogue SUV Sport, and I'm wearing a polo shirt and khaki pants right now.
That's right.
So much for my hood street credentials.
And I'm in my NPR uniform T-shirt that says Detroit versus everybody. All right, let's wrap up IU Cinema. And by the way, thank you for IU Cinema for putting up with this. Saturday, February 8th at IU Cinema at 4 o'clock from 1937, Lost Horizon. And at 7 o'clock from 1968, a film called Unstrap Me.
What?
Let's look that one up, shall we?
Is that safe for work?
Well, we're going to find out. Directed by George Cukor, not George Cukor. An aging, sexually frustrated Uncle Boho abandons his passionate home life for a full road trip full of titillating thrills and horny engagements. Made by George Cukor, known for his prolific output of lurid and hilarious amateur films. Here we go. Unstrap Me is a spectacle of fantastic costumes, dazzling settings, outrageous makeup, and racy encounters. About the film, George said, "This film is my longest movie in color because someone else produced it. It has a lot of scenery, and the soundtrack has a lot of sound. And in black, bold black type, contains explicit content." Not softcore, but a step above it, I'm guessing.
Unstrap Me Too was 95 minutes long.
And Boogaloo. So anyway, that's happening at IU Cinema at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin on February 6th, a free event Friday and Saturday, so 6th and 7th, of the Inseparable Film Tour. It's five original films about Indiana created by five award-winning Indiana filmmakers. February 14th and 15th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. for Valentine's Day. And there's a free showing on Thursday the 13th at 1:30 p.m. for those 55 and older, courtesy of Swartz Family Community Mortuary. But anyway, the original...
I love you to death.
Yeah. I know, the original Sabrina with Audrey Hepburn, Humphrey Bogart, and...
I suppose the one with Harrison Ford.
William Holden. It's... okay, you know, but not compared to Billy Wilder's version.
Well, actually, but speaking of movies and Valentine's Day, you'll be surprised where I'm taking The Love of Mr. Boz this year.
To see Claudine.
No, Casablanca.
Really?
Yes.
Do you need Peter Lorre there?
because
Rick, Rick.
because the symphony on the Circle.
Oh, that. I thought you were actually taking the Morocco?
Yeah.
No, the ISO is doing Casablanca
with Live.
Has the lovely Mrs. Shabazz seen Casablanca yet?
She has never watched it in its entirety.
Oh, perfect.
The only parts that she has actually ever watched.
The ending.
Not the ending.
Really?
It's when they do the raid. Like, you know, I'm shocked to find gambling.
One of our favorite quotes
you're winning,
ever.
You're winning, sir. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yes.
So that part she's seen
quite
a bit.
Cool.
I mean, now, if I'm watching it at home, like I said, she will, you know, just kind of come in and out and watch different parts. But like, you know what? We're going to go to the symphony. You know, and you're actually going to see a live orchestra do Casablanca.
So anyway, that's happening at the ISO. So you have choices.
Yeah, February 14th and 15th, both times 8 o'clock. We'll be at the Saturday one.
There you go.
Dinner at the Columbia Club first and then the Symphony second. See, I told you my street cred is just disappearing.
That's fine. You know what? It's Meridian Street. February 21st, 7:30 p.m., Friday, Pretty Woman. And then, 2 o'clock, Saturday, February 22nd. I mentioned this was my top film of 2019, the Aretha Franklin concert documentary, yeah. Amazing Grace. So you have another chance to see this on the big screen. I highly recommend it. And in that night, 7:30 p.m., Saturday, February 22nd, you can see Anchorman on the big screen.
Is Black Rocky Horror Picture Show playing around here anywhere?
Well, we're going to get to that. I'm almost there. I do want to mention now on Monday nights at the Vogue, they've been doing movies.
Really?
Well, I think like some restaurants that are closed on Mondays to kind of recoup, and it's a slow night. I think they're trying something different. They've been doing these. February 3rd at 7 o'clock. Oh, I'm sorry, 8 o'clock. Doors open at 7. They're showing Stand By Me, which I need to revisit. I was in high school when that film came out, and I thought I don't need to see whiny little kids. I'm living
it. Very young, so, Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton and River, Ethan Hawke and
River Phoenix.
Yeah, River Phoenix. Not Ethan Hawke. Sorry, this is River Phoenix. Monday, February 10th at 8 o'clock at the Vogue, Dirty Dancing, which
don't mess with baby.
Yeah, nobody puts baby in the corner. Let's see, and then. Monday, February 24th at 8 p.m., Shawshank Redemption. And then March 2nd at 8 p.m.
And nobody knew that Andy Williams is...
Andy Williams? Dufresne. Now I want to see Andy Williams in the Shawshank Redemption with a sweater. Speaking of
this most wonderful time of the year.
Speaking of misspeaking, I talked to you about this last week. This cracked me up. So, on Indiana Week in Review, I was listening to this on the way home last week. But there was a piece about there was a bill that was being introduced where they would allow cameras to be on construction sites,
yeah.
And they would photograph you if you were speeding. So this has been brought up before. The piece of audio. Hi, Brandon. I know I'm mentioning this. And this was also the same episode where they did quote Casablanca earlier. But the one piece of audio it had by a politician who was against this idea, he said, "I don't want Big Daddy looking over my shoulder. I now want George Orwell's cat on a hot tin roof or Burl Ives hanging out at the construction sites with a camera."
You can't miss him because he's wearing like a big white suit and white hat.
It's Big Brother, folks. But yeah. I that just tickled me to no end.
I don't want Big Daddy or Big Step
Big Daddy or Step Sister Woman or yeah. Brick or Maggie or anybody. The no neck monsters running around.
Neither like no neck monsters.
So yes, I probably shouldn't give credit to who that politician was, but thank you for that piece of audio.
Now I got to go back and find the podcast.
Oh, it's funny. So anyway, that is. That for there. I also want to mention, if you're in Bloomington, we go back to Bloomington a little bit, at the Buskirk Chumley Theater, they are also having the Shorts Film Festival on Saturday the 2nd at 2 o'clock and 4:15 p.m. Friday, February 7th, they're showing The Princess Bride. And then...
My name is Juan Pablo Pantoja.
Poblano? Sunday, February 9th at 7:30 p.m., they're showing The Dark Crystal. Which I need to revisit again.
Starring Michael Dukakis?
It's not Michael Dukakis. Thank you, Dennis Miller. Friday, February 14th at 7:30 p.m., Casablanca. Saturday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m., Love and Basketball, which I need to revisit. Sunday, February 16th at 6 p.m., the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. Saturday, February 22nd at 7:30 p.m., The Wiz. Sidney Lumet and Richard Pryor. Not quite that.
Yeah, let's go ease on down the road. Is The Sorrow and the Pitiful playing anywhere?
No, Woody Allen. It is not being shown. And then Friday, February 28th at 7 and 9:30 p.m. is the Pride Film Festival, as of course, with Bloomington Pride. That is also happening Saturday the 29th. So, yeah, all that stuff is happening down at the Buskirk Chumley Theater. So, new on DVD and Blu-ray. So this is also, some films that were released earlier in the year that are up for award consideration are now coming out on video. The big title this week is Parasite, which
How is that?
I really like it. And I've seen the director's work before, The Host, Snowpiercer. You know, this is a family of grifters that wind up squatting in a really nice house, basically. And it has some really nice twists and turns. One of the things that The Host and Snowpiercer and this all have in common, and the director likes to cover this, is the class system and how they treat one another.
So I was actually thinking about going to see it.
No, you should. You're one of those. I don't mean one of those. But you know, when something is nominated, you're like, oh, well, you know, it gets a boost in attendance,
yes,
because for curiosity's sake. And the other one of note is Harriet, which is out, and of course Cynthia Erivo is nominated for her performance as Julia Roberts. That's an old bit from the executive.
Well, actually, no, there was some controversy behind that. Because what's her name who played Harriet Tubman was a British And some people say, well, it should have been played by an African American woman, not a British African.
I believe we were Englishmen in Henry IV. That's by that rationale, only Danish people should play Hamlet.
Exactly.
Classically trained actors work. Yep. So you know,
the only time I would have a problem with something like that is. It's one thing to, you know, take artistic license and kind of present the production in a different way, but if you're doing it in such a way that totally just shoots the integrity, mm-hmm, you know, of the piece to hell, then that got a little bit of a problem.
So, but did they have the same problem when our guy Chiwetel Ejiofor, you know, that English African American who starred in 12 Years a Slave,
yeah,
and Lupita Nyong'o? So, yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of they took our jibs aspect of that, but work is work. So she's fine. She's actually quite good. And
then there's a question: do British African Americans, or are they more
British? See, we say this, Abdul at the old building had an actual caller refer to Chiwetel as that English African American. We're like, no, that's not how it works. Half English, half Nigerian, no America.
Exactly, which means he's going to sell you aluminum siding with a very nice accent.
There you go. But no, it's interesting to watch her obviously go from runaway scared slave to woman who takes charge, yeah, and vengeance. So yeah, Harriet is out there. Motherless Brooklyn, the film starring and directed by Edward Norton, that was getting some push.
I don't think Niecy Nash should have played Harriet.
Anyway. But those are the new titles. Criterion has the latest from one of the classic films from Pedro Almodovar, All About My Mother, because they released the film that he did with Antonio Banderas on video last week. But the other title that Criterion put out, I'm very excited to revisit this, Sidney Lumet's film version of Failsafe. Failsafe, for those who don't know, is Dr. Strangelove, but a drama.
Okay.
It's from the same book, but it's, you know, there's a miscommunication between the U.S. and Russia, and the end of the world is coming fast. And instead of Peter Sellers, you have Henry Fonda, Walter Matthau,
yes,
Larry Hagman. But it's fascinating to watch both of those. I would watch Failsafe first and then watch Strangelove. But same source material, and yeah. different tone.
Yes, mein Führer. I mean, Mr. President.
So yeah, all of those are out on Blue. So
does Larry Hagman say, "I can walk"?
No, he is not. No, he's got a giant 10-gallon hat.
10-gallon hat, but he did get shot. He was in a wheelchair for a while.
He was in a wheelchair for a while. That's the old Who Shot JR. So, Abdul, what have you been watching recently? And I know some of it has been inspired by the nominations. I'll put on my jacket in a little bit for Dr. Soci Film Therapist. But
well, the last movie that I actually had time to go see was 1917.
Yeah, we're about 52 minutes in. We're finally getting to the, sorry, folks. We just talked. So,
yeah.
Now, you saw this on a big screen, I hope.
Yeah, saw it on the big screen. My wife works out in Plainfield at Massage Envy, and so we'll occasionally, the big movie theater.
That's where you suffer from.
Yeah, we have right around the corner, we'll go and see it. So we saw 1917, really liked it, really enjoyed it. It was interesting trying to explain to my wife some of the historical context of what's going on.
Right.
Because, like, yes, that's called No Man's Land. I mean, and they were there for, like, 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't.
That was not the area. Yeah.
That was not the area. And by the way, this is also World War I, so there are no rules of war
No Geneva Convention.
Yeah, there's Geneva, Illinois Convention.
You're holding up the book, the Geneva Convention, and I have a red cross on my helmet. You can't shoot me.
Yes, we can. There's no Lake Geneva Convention in this one. That's kind of how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I thought it was really good. Spoiler alert: one of the major characters has a problem in the middle and doesn't make it to the end. But no, really like that, and that totally made up for the movie we saw before that.
Now, this I'm going to guess now it's time for Dr. Soci Film Therapist, where I will listen to Abdul's cinematic problems and hopefully bring a solution to this. Now, let me put on my corduroy jacket with the pads, elbow pads.
Don't forget your pipe.
And my pipe. There we
go.
That's right. Abdul, is this was this one of your wife's selections?
Yes, it was.
And I'm also going to guess, because it's that time of year, I mean, you have the Oscar contenders, but you also have films in January, February that just need to be out there. I'm going to guess this was an out there January release. Am I right?
It wasn't even out there. It was just out.
I see. And what did your lovely wife select for your evening to watch?
We went to go see the film Underwater.
Ah, the Kristen Stewart alien underwater, or Leviathan for you old school fans out there. So it's, if I remember right, an underwater research team and there's an alien on board.
Yeah, or the creatures live underwater.
The people under the stairs.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, I had no idea that I spent all this money to watch, Killer Calamari.
It is hard to find good calamari, especially in a landlocked state.
Especially 6 miles underwater. No, yeah. it was just stupid. I mean, it wasn't even like good like Aliens or Alien 3. It was just stupid.
Doesn't Ms. Stewart kick butt and take names near the end?
Yeah, and look, she's running around her underwear. Where have I seen that before?
The first Alien, Ridley Scott, thank you.
And, oh, look, they blow up the whole thing. Oh, where have I seen this before?
So are you saying that that Sigourney Weaver should get a portion of the check for the inspiration?
Actually, they should pay Sigourney Weaver. And then you see, because you got, like, the Leviathan big giant shrimp Chinthulu creature thing at the very end. Okay, because at first you think the alien creature, by itself is the thing that's doing all the problem. Turns out it's not, because there are like lots of them, because they're really like just the egg creatures out of the mother chinchillian calamari thing that they blow up at the end. And as I sat there, I'll tell you this.
Okay,
my wife must have knew how bad this movie was going to be. Because she made me promise before we left, okay, this movie's bad. You won't say anything, will you?
Oh, no.
You're not going to be mad,
no,
are you?
No, no, here we go.
Like, well, sweetie, I shall conduct myself accordingly.
How many films are you going to pick after this?
Oh, we're dozen. Good. We're good through the 2024 elections. And then after the movie was over, we just politely got up.
She could read your eyes, though.
Yeah, we just got up our seats and just started.
You said not a thing.
I know. Like,
did she enjoy it?
She really didn't ask.
No, but did she enjoy it?
I think when she...
Or did she realize what she had done?
I think she fully realized what she had done.
Text from Mrs. Shabazz in 3, 2,
I think it was one of those, well...
Oops.
That was something. It's like, yes, dear. Yes,
okay.
It was.
All right. So
I'm just going to go, spend $10.
So have you shown her the old Godzilla movies?
Well, she will watch them occasionally.
Too cheap, too chintzy?
Too chintzy for her, because my favorite Godzilla film of all time is Destroy All Monsters.
Yes.
Because that to me is like that is Son of Svengoolie, Saturday night, 8 o'clock. I'm 10 years old in Chicago,
Yep.
1981, just having a blast.
Exactly.
Watching the Godzilla monster. Now, she will go to the new Godzilla stuff.
Well, because you have bigger budget, better technology, and real actors.
Yeah, and better guy in a rubber costume.
Yes, yeah. Better guy in a rubber costume, so.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
So, it's not that she doesn't like them. She just sort of, looks at them, shakes her head, and just keeps on walking.
Because sitcom
remember,
wife look.
Yeah,
yes.
Because remember, I'm not just watching Godzilla. I'm also watching Johnny Sacco and his flying robot. I'm watching Ultraman, the Space Giants.
If
anything that was on the Channel 44, the Chicago Channel 44 equivalent.
Channel 50 in Detroit.
In Detroit is
WKV,
what we
yeah.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, go back. By the way, you can all listen. Go back to. But I had Evan Dossi on as he purchased the Godzilla box set that Criterion put out. I think you will if you have. Some extra coin, you might want to take a look at that. It's very thorough.
Well, you see, but the only Godzilla movies I really like were Destroy All Monsters and Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster.
Okay.
And the only reason I like Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster is because of that really stupid, cheesy Save the Earth song.
Yes. we're not playing that this week.
Which, by the way, is not only in English, but also in Japanese.
It is.
There are two versions
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. So you
and
all
both,
kinds.
And both just as bad as the other one.
Exactly. All right, so Abdul's still seeing stuff, but he's got some more titles out there. Now,
I'm actually trying to catch Parasite this week.
Okay, very good, and it's but definitely I know it's on video. See it in the theater. See it in the theater with the group whenever possible.
No, I'm going to see it in the theater, and I'm going alone.
Ah, okay, all right, and
because sometimes, the other movie I saw recently was Jojo Rabbit.
I know you saw that alone.
Yes.
Couldn't get past the concept.
No.
That's all right.
My wife doesn't think there's anything funny about Hitler.
But she's not seen the producers.
Well, she has, but...
Still done. Not yeah. not quite to the level of you and I.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see what's so funny about this. You know what's the funniest thing about Herman, sweetie? There's nothing funny about Herman.
The Führer was Butch. All right.
Watch out, Elizabeth Dupree.
I'm going to give you some good news now. We were talking, and Abdul and I got very excited when we saw this. Because now in 2020, we have English actors playing Americans. We have non-traditional casting. We have shows that are happening on Broadway now, where, for instance, you can have an all African American cast doing
Hamilton.
Hello, on Golden Pond, or You Can't Take It With You, or you can have. I remember it was up in Minneapolis, but Courtney B. Vance and Angela Bassett got the star in a stage production of His Girl Friday, which is the front page, basically.
Yeah.
So these opportunities are happening, and it's
and the good thing about them though is that you can experiment with the casting and not tear up the integrity of the underlying story because it makes sense.
Yes. With that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, happening in Baltimore, Maryland, and hopefully will be happening elsewhere. I'm going to read from I believe it's the Baltimore Sun, Rocky Horror with a black cast, chocolate-covered Rocky Horror coming to Baltimore Soundstage in February.
So would this be the Roscoe Horror Picture Show?
He said that, not me. Not doing that. So in chocolate Rocky Horror, a predominantly black cast.
Starring Darnell Williams.
No. This is a production where they're performing it in front of the screen.
Yeah.
So it is not the Rocky Horror Show. It's a Rocky Horror Picture Show with a cast in front. So that is happening in Baltimore, and hopefully this will start popping up in other towns.
So when Darnell said he didn't like his teddy bear, was no good kid. When he threatened your life with a switchblade knife, what a guy, makes you cry. And I did.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? Better soundtrack. It's going to be the Funk Brothers. It's going to have a more Motown sound.
Instead of Dr. Frankfurt, it would be Dr. Polish Sausage. I mean, I'm just trying to go through all the... No, Dr. Hot Links. There we go.
I'm over here. You go, Abdul. Yeah,
you got that Homer Simpson meme look where you step right
back. Yeah, just right into the hedge.
Step back to the shrubbery.
Nope. I can't say any of that. Not gonna. So, all right. So anyway, you saw Rocky Horror as a teenager.
That's a rather tangy subject.
You saw Rocky Horror, obviously, as a teenager.
Actually, the first time I saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show in its entirety, Armed Forces Network.
Really?
Yes. Germany, 1988.
Yeah.
Home over like spring or fall break from college in Munich. And it was happening. It's like Saturday night, 11 o'clock, and the Armed Forces Network ran the Rocky Horror Picture Show in its entirety.
Wow.
And I was in the living room watching it, and my little brother was in the room that we had watching on the black and white TV, and he's like, what in the world is this? Like, oh, my God, it's Rocky Horror. Now, please note, when we were kids in Chicago on the old, like I say, no, for you it was your Channel 50. For us it was our, you know, Channel 32.
Mm-hmm.
On the you know, Monday through Friday afternoons where they played the music videos, one of the music videos they did was the Time Warp. From the Rocky
that
Horror.
That is true. Yeah, they would do that.
Yeah, from Rocky Horror. So he had never seen the whole film, just the time warp part.
So you're in high school at this time?
Yeah.
Okay. How'd that go? How'd your brother?
I mean, you just kind of like, what the...
I got to see it as soon as I got my driver's license. So this is 86. But we had there were certain places in Flint. I grew up in Flint, and but I remember there was one theater. I believe it was the Genesee Valley, one of the four screeners, and they did it once, and they never did it again because people brought in props that had nothing to do with. Somebody brought a water Uzi and filled it with chocolate syrup. Somebody brought eggs and they would throw it and it would crack on the ceiling and of course eventually drip and fall on somebody. This is why we can't have nice things.
Now, when I was in college in Munich, Germany, there actually was a place that on Fridays, actually a movie theater actually did do show the whole Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Could you sing Rocky Horror in German?
It was all English.
I know, but could you? Cabaret.
Yeah, if I have the words in front of me, I could probably translate.
Okay, very good.
Look, Herr Dr. Feinkonfelter.
But yeah, they did it for a while. And then I remember, like, the University of Michigan Flint had a screening, and they were very smart because it's a college campus. Along with your ticket, you got a bag of props. So you got a little popcorn, a little newspaper, and that was about it.
Yeah.
So
nobody brought toast.
I believe there. Yeah, I believe. But you couldn't throw hot dogs.
Yeah. So what?
Yeah, it was hard to find a regular. There was not a regular location in Flint. In Detroit, well, actually in Utica, Michigan, there was one mall that showed it every weekend, and this is the late '80s. So by the time I was a junior and senior in high school, anytime I went down to Detroit for a concert, a movie, or a ball game, and this happened quite a bit. And if my energy was good, I would go and watch it. I remember going to see, it was the week I did three concerts in one week. I went to a Yngwie Malmsteen concert in Kalamazoo, the first Monsters of Rock concert at the Pontiac Silverdome. That was a long time ago. And then the next day at Pine Knob, that's our Deer Creek in Michigan. But
Ruhoff Morrison.
Yeah, and by the way, no, I'm going to save that rant for later. But Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea. Yeah, I saw jazz back then. And it was still – I got out of the traffic was pretty good, and I went to Utica and watched Rocky Horror and got home at like 3 in the morning.
Now, the last time I saw Rocky Horror on stage, the actual performance was 08, 09. My son was at school actually in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I went to go visit for a couple days, and their college was doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, wow. How's that?
He played Dr. Frankenfurter.
Yeah?
And I thought overall they did fine. There were a couple things that they did in the middle that I think took a lot longer than it should have because they had like a video camera.
Dad has notes.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, I did. Because when Frankenfurter kind of sneaks in and messes around with does the thing.
Brad Janet, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of filming that earlier, and so they could put it on the screen.
They did it.
Yeah, they actually did it.
Oh, that's a lot of change.
Yeah, there's a lot of change. It's like, okay, guys, I'm not here to tell you how to do your show, but I'm here to tell you how to do your
show. Going back to what we were saying earlier, that's a tough call because it is so, you don't want to sound like Tim Curry. It's so tempting to sound like Tim Curry. It's like doing a cover of a song. You could do it note for note and be a bar band, or do you bring your own twist to it? It was when Richmond Civic did A Few Good Men, I played the judge. And it wasn't so much that, but nobody was sounding like Nicholson or Cruz or anybody like that. But that you have that famous line, when we get to you can't handle the truth. But it's dangerously tempting because it's so immortalized. I mean, like, if you're doing Spamalot, you're trying not to sound like Python, but you are. Well, it's a weird gray area.
Well, like the same thing when we did Driving Miss Daisy.
Right. You don't want to be Morgan Freeman.
You'll be Morgan Freeman. And my good friend, actually, we still stay in touch, who played Jessica Tandy's character. I mean, she just played as an older woman who slowly has that sort of signs of kind of fading away. Where I use the Morgan Freeman character was just more for the demeanor. It's like, okay, I need to play a 75-year-old humble black man. I have no idea what that is. Because number one, I'm 35, and number two, I sure as hell ain't humble. But one of the things I did do is, this kind of goes to that, oh my God, that Stanislavski method acting. I can't believe I actually remember that from Theater 110 class.
Meisner.
Yeah.
Too.
Was I had a coworker that I worked with at the Illinois Attorney General's office. He was near retirement. He's about 63, 64. And his job was in the morning to go run the daily press clippings and then distribute to the office. So every once in a while, like, hey, Joe, do you mind if I go downstairs with you? I want to talk to you about something. I'm like, okay, sure. And so I kind of follow him, you know, watching how he walked, how he leaned, you know, a little bit slower. And so when the time the play finally came along, he and his wife, they came to see me.
They noticed it.
And so he sees me walk across the stage, and his wife was like, where have I seen that before? And he's like, I know exactly. That's why that son of a bitch kept following me downstairs.
The research we do.
Yep.
So anyway, so yeah, congratulations to Baltimore for having a chocolate Rocky Horror. We should all have one of those.
Yes, we should.
All right, I want to get to dead people we
Magenta.
Like.
Well, actually,
no, that's actually we're not changing that. So, but I want to get to a couple dead people we like because we never have time
actually.
For. Do you know where you're going to?
Yeah. Do you like the things of life?
By the way,
will you stand by your man?
By the way, Billy Dee Williams had better hair in that film than Diana Ross.
By the way,
it's also a scary credit directed by Berry Gordy.
By the way, speaking of other movies that we saw,
yes, sir.
Rise of Skywalker.
Ah, yeah. Hey, Billy Dee, how you doing?
Here's your check.
It's your film.
I liked it.
It's fine.
It's a Star Wars movie.
It is.
This has always been my problem with the Star Wars
fandom.
Yes, guys. I know it's going to sound weird. It's just a movie.
Well, that's, you know, the film critic is even saying it's just a movie. It's
just a movie. I mean, they're just kind of wrapping everything up and all in a day. And by the way, Palpatine was his father's grandfather and Rosebud was his sled.
Right.
Okay, now let's all move on.
Bruce Willis is dead all along. And Verbal Kent is by Kaiser Soze.
And by the way, it's a woman.
Right.
it's
a
really
man, baby.
Yeah.
I have to credit Patty Glenn in Richmond for this, but we have a new nickname for that, Phil. We call it Space Nazi Boyfriend Sweater.
Yes.
Because, you know, he's still a bad guy. He still did a lot of genocide. And then he comes running in with a boy. And I think it was Patty. Is that a boyfriend sweater he's wearing for the final sequence? And yes, I've seen the clips where it's him fighting and running to Bonnie Tyler's holding out for a hero. So,
well,
yeah.
Speaking of which, Adam Driver was actually on Saturday Night Live this past weekend.
It was a really good episode.
Yeah, they said they did the him as Kylo Ren as undercover boss.
Where are they now?
We're working on the Death Star.
So, anyway, that's out there. But I want to get to a couple dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Sonny Grosso is a New York – don't know the name, but he is a New York detective – who was the inspiration for Popeye Doyle in The French Connection.
Huh.
And, of course, this week, retired actor Gene Hackman, turned 90 this week.
Lex Luthor is 90 years old.
Salute to you, sir, and, you know, keep living the good life. It wasn't his fault that his last film was Welcome to Mooseport, but still a Hall of Fame bad mofro. So.
And one of the greatest villains of our time.
So was that your first encounter with Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, Mr. Luthor?
As a kid, yes.
Okay.
Now, as a more kind of
obviously
grown up,
you see him in other things.
You know, Bonnie and Clyde, Hoosiers, French Connection.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, no, Welcome to Mooseport. The really bad. Remember having those years of like, you know, it was always films about the presidency where it was like, you know, My Fellow
Oh, Absolute
American.
Power.
Absolute Power.
Clint Eastwood's film, yeah.
Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, salute to him. And
we
also
watch him pull off the wig and the greatest criminal mind of our time.
Writer Harriet Frank Jr.
What did he write?
Two Academy Award nominations we'll get to, but did a number of things in the 40s and 50s and then started like Schlitz Playhouse and Matinee Theater. One of her first big tent films, did the screenplay for the 1958 film The Long Hot Summer with Paul Newman. The Sound and the Fury, Home from the Hill, did another film with and her first Academy Award nomination, the screenplay for Hud, another Paul Newman film with Melvin Douglas and
Patricia Neal. Not to be confused with Chud.
Not Chud. Ombre, okay, so also a film with Paul Newman. So he played in, I believe it was half-breed is the term to use back then. So, one of the most beautiful Native Americans ever in cinema, Paul Newman and Ombre. The Reavers with Steve McQueen. The Cowboys, the John Wayne film where Bruce Dern killed him in 1972. The Carrie Treatment, Conrack, the John Voight film. His second Academy Award nomination was for the screenplay of Norma Rae, which won Sally Field her first Academy Award.
They liked me. They really liked me.
Well, that was the second. And then she also wrote Murphy's Romance, which was Sally Field and James Garner. And the last credit from 1990, Stanley and Iris with Jane Fonda and Robert De Niro. So a lot of small, low-key, small, except for Norma Rae, because that's about, pushing the union.
Actually, you know what? This makes me want to go back home and watch Trumbo.
But the good.
No, because I really do think that people don't fully appreciate, the writing that goes into a lot of this stuff and what writers really have to do to get a really good, whether it's a screenplay or whether it's a script.
Mm-hmm. Starts with the script. Starts with the spoken word. And so a lot of these films, now that I've told you these titles, Southern, small town, it's people. It's people and actions. I mean, probably, like I said, if you're going to say one of the loudest of this lot is probably Norma Rae, because it's a textile factory and it's about forming a union. But these are
graveyard shows.
These are lower key pictures compared to what we have today. So anyway, Harriet Frank Jr., salute. While we're on the tail end, we've been mixing theater and
popular
culture here. We want to give a shout out to our buddy Sarah, aka the Lady Wooster.
Yes,
we all have words we can't pronounce, and I had problems with pulsalemonemone.
Yeah.
So we had Missy say it, but our buddy Sarah, who was in Henry IV with us,
she played my arch nemesis.
Yes, well, she is another arch nemesis for mankind. She is playing Beatrice in Civic's production of Much Ado About Nothing, which is happening February 7th through the 22nd. Go to civictheater.org. We'll be in the front row throwing popcorn at her. You can't execute her in this one. but
spat in my face. Send Worcester to the death. And what's his face right next to her, too? But the rest.
And it was like your grandmother. You got that because you're with him.
Yeah, exactly.
but no, one of the great romantic comedies. And I got to play Benedict when I was 44. So it was about 6 years ago. But Civic Theater is doing that. It's a fun, fun show. And it's, by the way, PBS earlier this year had an all African-American production of Much Ado About Nothing. And what was cool about that production is, because at the beginning of the play, the boys are coming home from war, which they do. Mm-hmm. At the end, which I had never seen this done before, at the end, it's a happy ending. Strike up pipers. There is dancing. There is merriment. That does happen until the horn calls and they have to go back to service. Mm. Yep. So, mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to have that in this production at Civic, but that's the beauty of Shakespeare. This production is going to be different than that production. The next Henry IV we see, well, we're probably not going to be in it, and it'll be different from what we experience.
We'll be Henry 4.0. This time it's personal.
And according to Glenn, nobody likes part two. Dude. But that's the fun thing about when we do theater, is that you have a different experience. And I think that's why I watch the film versions of plays after I'm done with them, is because, and I use Much Ado as the example. I love Ken Branagh's film version. Yes, Keanu Reeves and all. And there's also a Will Wheaton version that was completely different in tone and style. And that's the beauty of this writing. But I've seen Ken Branagh's version of Much Ado probably like 20 times. And then after I got to do the play, a week after we closed, I sat down on a Sunday morning. I'm always the first one up. Got a pot of coffee and revisited that film. And my view of it changed because I had an experience with it. Doesn't make the film better and doesn't make it worse. And I wasn't doing notes and compare contrast. But it's different because I had an experience with it.
Yep. And I always watch, if it's a film or play that I've done before, I always watch it a little differently than the other
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. So that's the beauty of art, folks. The art doesn't change. We change.
And then if we can change, then we can all change. And that's
all the misquoting of Rocky IV.
Of course, it also freaks out my wife whenever I watch Godspell. Like, you did that? I was like, yep.
Were you
Judas?
Wait. Oh, in that. Okay. Yeah. I was like, you were Carl Anderson in Jesus Christ Superstar.
No, not yet.
Black Judas, huh?
Yep. No, have we ever done Jesus Christ Superstar? The one or two parts I would have always wanted to do was either A, Herod.
Yeah. Or Pilate.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty good. And by the way, I wish we had the audio, but Abdul and I got to interview Ted Neely. Years and years ago, this was at 1430. He was touring. I believe it was Corey Glover of Living Color was Judas, but yeah, you were the one that said, you know, you're closer to God's age now than Christ, because he was, I believe, pushing 60 and still playing Jesus, and just a really nice man. Didn't have a bad thing to say about anybody.
There are a ton of people that you and I have had the pleasure of interviewing together, just been some of the most awesome, coolest people
and
to talk to.
Weird and random and fun. Yeah, Johnny Witherspoon,
yeah,
and Sammy Terry.
Yeah, and the funny thing, Johnny Witherspoon is like, hey, could you do your Barry Gordy impersonation?
He put out his hand.
All your money.
But also,
David Alan Greer.
David Alan Greer. Yeah, that was so.
Because we really freaked him out when we brought up his appearance in the PBS Star Wars radio.
Star Wars radio thing. I brought up a soldier story. I just saw a clip of Adolf Caesar doing the bar monologue from Soldier Story, also a Soldier's Tale. We've over the years, and Richard Thomas was another one. I've told that story quite a bit. Of when you have somebody in studio, Richard Thomas is a great example. You talk about what they're promoting. In this case, it was a touring production of 12 Angry Men. So I love 12 Angry Men as do you. So we talked about that. And if there's time left over, you just kind of open the geek case. And we almost didn't mention the Waltons. I remember you saved it for the last question, but I brought up seeing him in London. My wife saw him in London. He did a movie in Indianapolis. He was in Winning with Paul Newman and Joanna Woodward. And, just Battle Beyond the Stars. So it's just, yeah, really.
And I think Battle Beyond the Stars was the one that kind of threw him for a little bit of a loop with our total complete geek.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, David Alan Greer coming in because he was on Smiley's show, and that's all about promoting whatever he's doing. So I think he was obviously doing a comedy show. And yeah, we dug deep. It's fun to dig deep.
Yeah, when you get to our level of geekdom, you know, this is the immortals talking.
Exactly. So also your pledge dollars at work. So all right. Once again,
which, by the way, where's my cheese calendar?
I got your cheese calendar right here with your sandals there, latte boy.
Birkenstock.
I'm sorry,
thank you.
Latte man. All right, just a reminder.
Chocolate latte man.
That's a mocha. Okay, there's no such thing as a mocha latte. You have a latte, you have a mocha. I manage the coffee shop.
I have a latte mocha.
You are a latte mocha. All right, civictheater.org, Much Ado About Nothing, February 7th through the 22nd. I guess, even though I played Benedict, Team Beatrice for this production, so go check that out.
Gotta go see my good friend Sarah.
You do. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Abdul, what's happening over at IndiePolitics.org?
Basically, we're at the point now, next week, there's a lot of stuff going on. We have the Iowa caucuses. You have the President's State of the Union address. Also, it is filing deadline for candidates for a public office, and we'll be seeing who will be on the ballot for governor, state reps, the whole nine yards. And we just finished, speaking of theater, Act 1 of the Indiana General Assembly, and now we're about to start Act 2.
This time it's personal.
Exactly. The revenge, Bosma's revenge.
All right. Abdul, always a pleasure to have you on.
They call him Mr. Speaker.
Wait, our favorite scene, our favorite moment from In the Heat of the Night. No, not that one. The second one.
Always good to see you, my friend.
All right, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!